Good afternoon, and welcome to On the Docket. I'm your host, Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today on the docket, we're talking about immigration law and the various hot topic issues it has presented in recent months. We're joined by Touro alumnus David Sperling, who's an immigration attorney with offices in Hempstead, Central Islip, Huntington Station, and Riverhead. His firm is dedicated to serving the legal needs of the rapidly growing Hispanic community on Long Island, as well as other immigrant groups. Before becoming an attorney, Mr. Sperling worked as a foreign correspondent in Central America, and then later as a journalist for the Miami Herald and Newsday. Although no longer a journalist, Mr. Sperling continues to write articles on immigration law for the general media, legal publications, and Spanish-language newspapers on Long Island. He's also appeared frequently as an expert commentator for Spanish-language TV networks, including Univision and Telemundo, and he's been a speaker and panelist for various Bar Association seminars. In 2012, Mr. Sperling established the DMS Dream Foundation, which grants scholarships to beneficiaries of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. We're glad you could join us today, David, and welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. So can you start by talking about the immigrant community on Long Island, maybe how large it is, how it compares to immigrant communities in other parts of the United States?
Certainly. Long Island has a very large immigrant community. They're divided. Of course, when you're talking about the immigrant community, there's the immigrant community that's legal and there's the immigrant community that's undocumented. So it's very hard to get solid numbers on it, but it's pretty much accepted that about 24% of Long Islanders are born in another country.
Wow.
And of
That's a high percentage.
It's a very high percentage. And when you take into account that immigrants also have a very high birth rate, you're talking about children that are U.S. citizens. So you're talking about a very large number of immigrants and immigrant families on Long Island. So nationwide, it's pretty much the same also, 24%, but you're taking into consideration a lot of high immigrant areas like New York City and Texas and Miami. Some states, of course, have very low levels of immigration, but Long Island has a large community. The largest community is actually Salvadorans. The Central American community is very big here on Long Island. If anybody drives through Brentwood or Hempstead or Riverhead, Glen Cove, you'll see those places are predominantly Central American.
So I hear there's an embassy out here as well?
Yes, yes. The Salvadoran consulate is out here in Brentwood. It's the only consulate in the United States that's located outside a city. And that's because the Salvadorans came to Long Island, which is a suburban area. Why did they come here? Because it starts way back in the 1980s when there was a war going on in El Salvador and also other Central American countries. And so the people that came were mostly from the country. They were caught in crossfire between the army and the guerrillas. And they came to – some of them came to Long Island primarily where there already was a Puerto Rican community established, for example, in Brentwood or in other communities. And then later, more people came first through the war and then economic reasons or family unification. And there's a lot of asylees also now that are coming into the United States in Long Island.
So can you explain the difference between – so there are immigrants that are here legally. There are immigrants that are here illegally. People talk about undocumented immigrants. People talk about – immigrants who are not citizens but are legal to work. How do you sort through all of these, the different status that people have?
Well, the key status is whether someone has what we call papers, if they're documented. Actually, the term undocumented is not really the best term because everybody's got some documents. They just are not the right kind of documents. When we're talking about people that are here legally, are people that have a work authorization or a green card, or eventually after green card, it becomes citizens. But there's a lot of steps along the way. For example, 2 years ago, President Obama announced this program for Dreamers. Those are immigrant kids came to the United States before they were 16 years old. So they've been given a work permit and like a deferral from deportation that's for 2 years and then it's renewable. A lot of Salvadorans and Hondurans on Long Island also have temporary protected status, which goes back, in case of Hondurans, to 1999 and Salvadorans to 2001. So there's a lot of people that have status here. There was also a special program called NACARA for Salvadorans and Guatemalans to enable them to get green cards. There's all different levels of legality here, but of course the goal is a green card, because that's permanent, mm-hmm. and eventually citizenship.
So you mentioned the Dreamers, and there's been the Dream Act, of course, being discussed in New York State. What are some of the current standing of the immigration reform issues in Washington?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, we're in a very, very crucial period right now. As you know, President Obama has made immigration reform one of his key initiatives and campaign promises, but nothing has happened, and a lot of it has to do with probably everything has to do with the gridlock in Congress. They can't get anything passed. I think both parties are to blame for this. Why? Because I think the Democrats are pushing for this automatic or speedy path to citizenship, which basically is in their interest, so they'll have a lock on the White House for the next 20 or 30 years. And the Republicans are willing to grant some sort of legalized status, but not citizenship. So there is a sweet spot there, but unfortunately there's a lot of politics involved. But what I wanted to say was that President Obama stated a few months ago that by the end of this summer, he was going to take some executive action. Now, what is executive action? The president by himself can take certain actions that will benefit a large number of people without the consent of Congress. So that's been always the problem. Obama said that, you know, the Republicans are not cooperating. So he's saying, because they're not cooperating, I'm going to do it on my own. Now, the question is what he's going to do. Most people think that he is going to expand this deferred action program that he had for the Dream Kids and to include some of the parents or people that have lived in the country for a long time and don't have criminal records. But we're waiting to see. We're expecting to hear about this anytime in the next few weeks.
So if that were to happen, you said that what the Dream Act basically does is give people temporary status for 2 years that presumably becomes renewable. Does the temporary status enable people to work? Does it enable people to go to school? I mean, what exactly is that status?
Yeah, let me just clarify something. There was a Dream Act is a bill in Congress. It was introduced well over 10 years ago, and it's always been voted down. What President Obama approved was something called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals that allow people to be protected against deportation and get a work permit. And with the work permit, they're able to work wherever they want. I've heard, you know, just the other day, one of my clients came in driving a Mercedes. We got him a DACA, a work permit, and he's got a better car than I have.
So we'll talk about more about this in the second half of the show, but what generally are the kinds of issues that you see in your practice?
Well, the main issue, of course, is protecting people against deportation and keeping families intact. There are 400,000 deportations every year, and under Obama, it's the highest number that it's ever been, far more than under President Bush. And the results of deportation are horrible. It's separating family. It's worse than it's banishment. So that's the main thing. When someone's immigration knocks on someone's door at 5 o'clock in the morning, takes away someone's parent. This is so traumatic. It affects the whole family. And I feel like sometimes an emergency physician saving lives, because once people get caught in the system, if they don't have an attorney, they're going to be in big trouble. They're going to get deported.
And so when we come back for the second half of the show, we'll talk about what actually happens when somebody is taken from the home, where they're taken to here on Long Island, and what kind of legal process they may or may not be entitled to. So I want to thank you, David Sperling, and please stay with us because coming up, we'll continue our discussion on immigration law. You're listening to On the Docket with Torah Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. We're joined by David Sperling discussing immigration law. Before the break, we were talking about deportation and what happens to individuals when somebody knocks on the door and says, you have to come with us. And of course, families then become in crisis. But where are these individuals being taken to? How do they get to speak to an attorney, and what can happen?
Well, first of all, ICE, which is Immigration Customs Enforcement, that's the enforcement arm of what used to be called the INS, they have certain priorities. The priorities are what they call fugitives or absconders, people who have a previous deportation order, never left the country, and also, of course, serious violent criminals, terrorists, child molesters, the whole gamut of criminal targets that are high profile. But there is a very wide net that that ICE casts over the immigration community. And the chief way that people get deported is if they're arrested for a crime, they're taken into they're booked, fingerprinted, and then if they're not bailed out within 48 hours, ICE generally puts what's called a detainer on them. Now, this detainer prevents the prison authorities from releasing the individual. Even though he's found innocent or found not guilty, he's acquitted of the original underlying crime, he's here illegally. So he's put into deportation proceedings. Once his jail term or his time served is over, then he'll be transported to an immigration facility, probably in New Jersey. And from there, the person will have an opportunity to take his case before an immigration judge in New York City. Those are for people that don't have prior orders of deportation. If an individual is caught that has a prior order of deportation, that's in many cases that's fatal. They very rarely have any type of relief, so they're taken away 5 o'clock in the morning, shipped away to New Orleans to New Jersey, and then to New Orleans or Louisiana, and sent right back to Central America. Those are really heartbreaking cases.
And so can simple things like a traffic infraction trigger this, or is it something that is a more severe criminal activity?
Well, there are, for example, someone who gets a desk appearance ticket for a violation, they're not going to come into contact with the system and they're never going to be incarcerated. It's just those people that arrest on fairly serious charge, although we can quibble about what's serious. I mean, you know, having some marijuana cigarettes is enough to get you deported.
Right.
And shoplifting, other things are enough to get you deported. And if the person doesn't have family or support to bail them out, they're going to wind up in immigration custody.
So the hot topic on the news right now, of course, is how the immigration system is or is not coping with the recent surge of unaccompanied minors from Central America. And, of course, we know that there's been an influx of kids into New York State, and recently on the news, a lot of them are being sent to the Javits Center. You know, is anybody coming to Long Island that we know of, and what exactly do you think we should be doing?
Well, our firm has been swamped with this surge of minors and mostly women coming into the United States. It's for a lot of reasons. It's, you know, some of it is family reunification. Some of it is economic reasons, but a lot of it also has to do with the violent political situation in these Central American countries, in Honduras, highest murder rate in the world, El Salvador and Guatemala. So they're coming for a variety of reasons. The reason that we're seeing a lot of Central Americans here is that there's a special rule for Central Americans and for children also. This was enacted under the Bush administration that minors who come into the United States are cannot be just summarily deported. You know, other people from other nationalities, like Mexicans, for example, if they get caught at the border, they're going to get deported or kicked back. But minors coming from Central America have an opportunity to have their case heard before an immigration judge. So we are swamped with these cases, and you know, many of those cases are very legitimate cases, and I would say the vast majority have some kind of relief. What's that relief? One relief is asylum based on the political situation in Central America, in which the governments are generally unwilling or unable to protect these people from gang warfare. Or there's something also called a special immigrant juvenile status. And that is a fantastic program in which minors under 18 years old, if they've been abandoned or neglected or mistreated by only at least one of their two parents, we can go to family court. Like we go to Central Islip here, family court all the time, in Riverhead Central and Westbury and family court, and we get the judge to approve what's called a special immigrant juvenile case. Once we have those findings and the judge determines that the best interest of the children is to stay here in the United States, then we're able to administratively close the immigration court proceedings. And in many cases, we can get a work permit and legal permit residence for a lot of these young people.
And so is it better and is it practical for these undocumented immigrants to seek out proactively legal assistance before they get identified or caught by government agencies? What is the level of trust between the immigrant populations and the legal community here on Long Island, for example?
Well, absolutely. An unauthorized immigrant, that's what I call them, unauthorized immigrants, they absolutely should have good legal counsel. There's a lot of things that we can do now for unauthorized immigrants to get them legal status. For example, if they've been in the country for more than 10 years and they have children or spouse or parents who are citizens or legal permanent residents, oftentimes we can do something to help people at least get them a work permit. It's absolutely crucial that these people like get in touch with a reputable attorney or legal service organization because there's so much that we can do now. I remember 5 years ago, 10 people came into my office and maybe I could help one or two. Now, there's a lot of programs available, a lot of possibilities. We find that we're able to help a majority of the people that just come in just for consultations about their legal status.
So, David Sperling, how can people contact you if they're interested in getting help with some of their immigration issues?
Well, thank you for asking. My main office is at 81 Carlton Avenue in Central Islip. My phone number there is 631-232-9555. I also have offices in Riverhead and Hempstead and in Huntington Station, all of which are big centers for the immigrant population, and we've been in practice for nearly 20 years. I'm a very proud graduate of Touro Law School, and they have been very supportive of me. I think that the immigrant community really has to reach out to attorneys and legal service organizations, especially at this time, to safeguard their to protect them, because there's a lot of deportation is still going on. People have to protect themselves.
So your central ISLIP office number for David Sperling is 631-232-9555. And I'm just curious how you got involved with immigration law issues in the first place.
Oh, that's interesting. When I was accepted at Touro, I had no idea what I was going to do, but I lived in Costa Rica for 2 years previously. I spoke rudimentary Spanish, and I felt and there weren't any immigration attorneys around, and it turned out to be a wonderful, wonderful practice area. We've expanded. We've had like 20 people in our office now. It's tremendously rewarding. I speak to a lot of other attorneys and work for corporate firms. A lot of unhappiness for a lot of business-oriented attorneys. I feel very blessed to be able to work with the immigrant community because I'm able to help people. It's a tremendous population. They're very hardworking. They refer other people. It's just a pleasure to work with the Hispanic community here in Long Island. Hopefully some of them will someday become go to law school, at Touro Law School, and become attorneys themselves.
And I'd say the fastest growing area of interest among the incoming students to law school here on Long Island is absolutely immigration law. And as we spoke offline, Touro Law Center is launching its immigration law clinic for the first time on Monday when classes open up. It has been the most popular clinic and is oversubscribed. So we look forward to your participation and help with that clinic as well. So that wraps it up for us here on the docket. David Sperling, thank you for joining us today, and thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to join us again next week for On the Docket. The show airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 103.9.